Researchers have long known that Americans work longer hours than their counterparts in most other wealthy countries. And we've all talked about why that is, including more recently the technology that lets many of us work around the clock. But now a new working paper uses a name for this trend, neurofacturing instead of manufacturing, get it? And they say it's especially pronounced among white-collar workers because that's how they advance, by working more than their colleagues. It's what Derek Thompson calls an arms race that produces mutually assured exhaustion. Derek Thompson is senior editor at The Atlantic. He joins us from Washington, as he does every Monday. Derek, welcome.
Hey, great to be here.
So this working paper, published by the National Bureau of Economic Research, tells us, gives examples of just how much more white-collar work Americans are doing. How much?
Yeah, it's important, I think, to lay the groundwork first. As you said, the American worker, the typical American worker, works longer than her counterparts in just about every similarly rich country in the world. You know, Japan, Canada, the UK. In fact, you know, we think of the Germans as being insanely industrious. But if the average American worked as much as the typical German, she or he would have 30 extra days off per year. Yeah. That's a free six-week vacation just for embracing the work schedule of Germany. Yeah. So that is sort of the base level that we're dealing with here. But in this working paper, the researchers looked at hours increased in the last 40 years of work and basically found that hours worked by higher-earning Americans, by white-collar workers, increased by 10% in the last 40 years. This is really historically strange. For most of economic history, as cultures get rich, as people get rich, they work less. Think about the landed gentry of England. They had all this leisure time, and it was the poor serfs who had to work throughout Europe. But today, that trend is switching, and it's the rich who are working longer, a trend that I've looked at in several articles that I sometimes call workism, that we've somehow made overwork a kind of modern religion.
Right, a secular religion. We've talked about that. And we've also talked about how because we have the technology, we can work around the clock. I was thinking that a few decades ago, I couldn't do editing at home. There were these big systems that lived only at work. Now it's on my laptop. I love doing editing at home until you're doing editing at home all the time and you've got a facial tick. I mean, what are some of the other factors? Yes, there's the technology, but they have technology in other countries as well. You talk about how, you know, particular American industries that are, you know, huge in this country, like consulting and banking, that plays a part too.
Right. So, yeah, let's dig into this word neurofactoring. Obviously, manufacturing, man, that's making stuff mostly with your hands. Neurofactoring is the concept that a lot of modern white-collar workers are making stuff mostly not with their hands, but essentially with their minds. I guess you can include their hands because they're typing on their keyboard. But this is a category of neurofactoring that includes artists, journalists, people who work in consulting or startups, anyone whose job is to constantly solve new challenges, answer new questions. They work in neurofactoring. And as you said, you know, there shouldn't be this enormous nostalgia for, you know, old-fashioned industrial labor. You know, you had lots of work in the late 19th century, early 20th century that was often literally backbreaking. And today it's not backbreaking to sit on your couch and edit an article or edit a radio piece for hours, but it does mean that the operating equipment of the 21st century is a portable device. And that means the modern factory isn't a place at all anymore. It's the day itself. We can take this portable equipment wherever we are and work at the office, at home, at the library, at a friend's place. We can theoretically be as productive at 2 a.m. as we are at 2 p.m. And as a result, I think you have a lot of white-collar workers that have this really fraught relationship with work, where on the one hand, yeah, they can do work that's a lot more fun than, you know, harvesting, sperm whale oil out of a decomposing whale's head in order to light our lamps. You know, modern work is a lot more fun, a lot safer than that, but it comes with this side effect of overwork.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, there is a lot of work today. We know that's still very dangerous and backbreaking, and there is a bigger divide now between these white-collar workers we're speaking of and blue-collar workers. We'll put that aside for another day. But another factor here is that some of these industries, we mentioned consulting, they demand this fealty from their workers and this round-the-clock, round-the-world kind of, you know, job. But also, in the minute or so we have, you know, a lot of workers, as you point out, know that their bosses are clear. Whoever works the most gets ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're really, really smart, I think, to break this into at least two categories. You know, 150 million workers, there's a lot of people to cover when we're talking about, you know, the state of modern work. But on the one hand, I think it's absolutely true that you have among workers in blue-collar industries a lot of underwork, a lot of workers who would like to work more hours but can't find it, or those hours are terribly distributed throughout the week. And there's an entirely different problem among white-collar, richer workers, which is what I'm talking about here in terms of overwork. These are, as you said, different categories. But one thing that's definitely emerged in the U.S. economy in the last 40 years is that workers at banks or consulting firms, they've learned that if they put in more time, the bosses will give them promotions, thinking that they're basically wedded to their job. And so here you have this expectation among 20-somethings, maybe early 30-somethings, to put off the trappings of a typical life, devote themselves to their job in the hope that eventually they'll make that partner track. But this essentially is, it's a bit of a trick that the employers are using on these workers in order to persuade them to give up everything outside of
working. I love the phrase, mutually assured exhaustion. Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.